All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Kuf Nun Tes 159. We are picking up Kuf Nun Ches Amud Beis 158b by the two dots, six lines up from the bottom. We'll say we dedicate our shir this morning. And there's Chos of Arafua Shalima for David Meir Ben Bluma, who's undergoing a procedure this morning, as well as he should have a complete and enduring Rafua. And we wish a Mazel Tov to Greg Levitan, Baruch Hashem, here on the morning after his daughter's Chasana. That's Daf Yomi dedication, Yashar Koach. Continue Nachas from the Chasan and Kala. All right, so let's begin. Am Rabbi Smaloi. I'm sorry, so let me be done. So Rabbi Smaloi said the following. Said, Ada Amra ben Azai. So the Gemara says, remember, the Gemara is going back for just a moment to the Mishnah. The Mishnah discussed a machlokes between Rabbi Akiva, or I should say Tanakama and Rabbi Akiva, about the case of the house that fell down on the son and the mother together. So the Tanakama Paskin, everyone agrees Yachloku. Rabbi Akiva said, no, that even in this case, we leave the property Becheskasan, in the proper chazaka. So Ben Azai then came along and said to Rabbi Akiva, he said, Amr lo Ben Azai, al chalukin al mitzaren al shabbos al chalik alim al sashavin. So Ben Azai said to Rabbi Akiva, why are you creating machlokes? You know, we have enough machlokes as it is. In other words, there's enough disagreements. Finally, we came to a point where everybody seemed to agree. Why can't you just leave it alone? So the Gemara just makes an interesting observation. Amr Rabbi Smaloi, Ada, Amra ben, so the Rashi says Ada means Hada, that which Amra ben Azai said. You see from here that what Talmid Chavad Rabbi Akiva Hava. You see that Ben Azai Rabosei wasn't just only a Talmud, but was what we call a Talmud Chaver. Rabosei Talmud Chaver means someone who began as a disciple, but ultimately again rises through the ranks to really become a peer. This individual became a peer. So the Gemara says, Shebasa. Because again, he spoke to Rabbi Akiva Rabosai in a first person, you have come. So the fact that he said you, as opposed to speaking to his Rebbe in the third person, or in some type of deferential term, so he spoke to him more as like a friend, like a direct conversation. So you see from here that Ben Azai enjoyed a Talmid Chaver relationship with Rabbi Akiva. Okay, Shalchem Mitam. So we'll say they sent him marriage to the following case. Shalchem Mitam. So this will say just an unrelated case. Ben Shalava Benichse Aviv, Bechaye Aviv Umeis. Now we're going to have to, I'm going to read it, and then we're going to have to figure out a way to define this case. So a son who went ahead and borrowed. Now, Bosei, it sounds like Shalava Benichse Aviv, he borrowed against his father's property, Bechaye Aviv, while his father was alive. See, he borrowed money with the expectation that he would have a Yerusha. And then what happens? Umeis, and then Bechaye Aviv, Umeis, and then he died. Now, Bosei, now the he that died, seems to be the borrower, right? The borrower died. So, b'no motzi miyad al kuchos. So ultimately, again, his son has the ability to go ahead and extract property from anyone who purchased it. V'zohi shakasha b'dinei mamonis. And this is a case that is difficult to comprehend in monetary law. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? So the Gemara says, lova my mafik. I don't understand. If he borrowed against property, then what extraction is there? Furthermore, what lekuchos, what purchasers did we have? In other words, there doesn't seem to be a case of a transaction. There seems to be one case over here of a son who borrowed money against his Yerusha. He borrowed money against his Yerusha. So there's no sale, there's no extraction. So what are you talking about? It says, here's how you have to define the case. So we'll say, top of kuf nun tes. Ben, shemachar benichse aviv, bechaye aviv. So we'll say, oh, here's the case. A son sold property. A son, we'll call the father Yaakov. Then what happens? So Yaakov has a son, Reuven, and Reuven sells his father's property, Bechaye Aviv, right? In his father's lifetime. So we'll say, see here, this meaning, which how would you categorize such a sale like that? He sold his father's property during his father's lifetime. Right, we call it illegal, right? Because remember, he doesn't have the right to sell that property. But, I mean, again, he's not a bad guy. He's just eager. Eager for all the wrong things, apparently. But he's eager, right? He's zaris. Everybody has to be zaris about something. This guy is zaris about his Yerusha. So he goes ahead and he sells his father's property during his father's lifetime. Umeis. So they'll say, then what happens? So then the father dies, but then everybody dies. In other words, Yaakov dies. Now remember, the order over here is that Reuven, the son, dies. Then subsequently, Yaakov, the father, dies. And Reuven leaves behind his son. You know, the Rashbam always calls it the son Chanoch, just borrowing biblical family trees. So Chanoch, who's the son of Reuven, the grandson of Yaakov, is alive. So what does Chanoch do? So Beno, Moti Miad Alekuchos. Chanoch has the right to go back to the purchasers and extract the property that his father sold. We'll say, why does Chanoch have the right to extract the properties? Why? Because it was an illegal sale. Meaning the sale itself was void because when Chanoch's father Reuven sold Yaakov's property, Yaakov was still alive. Reuven had really no right to sell that property. Therefore, Chanoch could go back and seize the property. Vezohi shakasha bedinei mamonas. And I want to say, the Gemara says, this is just a difficult case in monetary law. Meaning, because again, I will say, what you just have over here is a seemingly unrelated party, a grandson, going ahead and seizing property from people who thought they bought it legally. Yet, the concept is not complicated. The concept seems to be clear, but the ramifications of it are difficult. So the Gemara says, "Valeim rulei avuch mazbin va'at mafik." So the Gemara says, why can't the purchasers say to Chanoch, to the son, I don't understand, your father sold it to us, what right do you have to extract it from us? Umay kushya, dilma matzi amar, mikoach avuha de'aba kasina. We'll say there's a very easy answer to that kasha, that Chanoch, the grandson, could say, I'm not coming out the koach of my father, I'm coming rather out the koach of who? Of my grandfather. In other words, I remember Rabbi said the case over here is you have Yaakov, Reuven, Chanoch. So ultimately, again, Reuven's one who sold off the property while Yaakov was still alive. Illegal sale. Reuven dies, Yaakov dies. Which essentially means now that Yaakov, by the way, that Chanoch is the inheritor not only of his father, Reuven, but also of his grandfather, Yaakov. So therefore, again, when Chanoch shows up, he says to the purchasers, I'm not coming here really out to my father, Reuven. I'm coming here out to my grandfather. Because also remember, the order over here is Reuven died, Reuven the son died, was inherited by his father, and then Yaakov died. So ultimately, Chanoch is inheriting his grandfather. So he's coming, I'm coming here out to my grandfather, not my father. Teido d'chsiv, because I also remember a grandson does inherit a grandfather. D'chsiv, because the pasuk says, according to the pasuk from Tehillim, Tachas avosecha yihiyu banecha. Ultimately, again, under the fathers will be the sons. So the pasuk says, Tishisemo v'sarim b'chal aretz. They will become officers throughout the land. I will say, if you look at the Rashbam, Teida, it's right across the Rashbam, Teida, Techanoch ben Reuven Yoresh es Yaakov. So we'll say, see that Chanoch ben Reuven has the ability to go ahead and inherit Yaakov, his grandfather. Shalom ikoach Reuven. Now we'll say, what the Gemara is saying over here is that a grandson does have the ability to go ahead and inherit a grandfather. A grandfather. So the Gemara says, because the pasuk says, under the fathers will be your sons. So the Gemara says, "Dahinu Yaakov yebanecha, dahinu Chanoch midlok siv tachtecha yihiyu banecha." So we'll say the Gemara is making an interesting drush over here. The pasuk could have said, "Tachtecha yihiyu banecha." Underneath you would be your sons, which I will say the Gemara then sends would be a reference to a father and his sons. Instead, it uses a more expansive lashon of tachas avosecha. Yihiyu banecha. So the Gemara understands that avosecha on abanecha over here doesn't just mean fathers and sons, but also means what? Grandfathers and grandsons. So the Gemara darshins over here that a grandson has the ability to inherit the grandfather. Therefore, in this case over here, the grandson is coming to claim property that was illegally sold by his father from the purchasers. So the Gemara says, Ela ikash yakashi. See, right, Brother, if you want to have a complicated case, here's the complicated case. Ben Bechor, we'll say, get ready for this. Ben Bechor shemachar chelik Bechor b'chayi aviv. So we'll say, listen to this. We'll call him again Reuven, right? Yaakov is the father, Reuven's the Bechor. Reuven's going to get Pishnayim. So what does Reuven do? Reuven proactively sells his Pishnayim portion to someone else. Now we'll say, so understand, so he gets double portions. He sells that portion. And let's say again, whatever the Metzias is, his father set aside particular land for the Pishnayim, whatever it might be. He sells the Pishnayim property while his father is still alive. Umeis, Bechai Aviv. Now what happens? Then the Bechor, Reuven, predeceases his father. So Reuven dies while Yaakov is still alive. And then what happens? We'll say subsequently Yaakov dies. but there's still a son by the name of Chanoch, right? The son of Reuven, grandson of Yaakov, who's still alive. Beno motzi miyad halakuchos. Ultimately, again, the son, Chanoch, has the ability to extract the property from the purchasers who purchased it from his father. Vizohi shakasha v'dinei mamas. And I will say, this is a difficult halakha in monetary law. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Abu Amazbin, Ihu Mafik. So the father sells and the son has the right to go ahead and extract it. Vichitema, Hachanami, Amar Mikoach, Abu Ada Abba Kasina. But why is it so complicated? Let Chanoch show up and say, listen, I'm not really here representing my father. I'm really here representing who? My grandfather, meaning my father illegally sold my grandfather's property when he really didn't have the right to do so. I am now the yoresh of my grandfather, and therefore, again, that's the property I'm claiming. To which the verse is 1 second. Imi koach avua da abba kaasya bechelik bechora maya vidate. But I will say, here's the problem. If he's coming ultimately out his grandfather, then what? Then he has no rights in Pishnam. In other words, remember, Chanoch, the grandson, is not the Bechor of Yaakov. And as such, again, if he's coming to extract Pishnayim property, that's not his right. He is not the Bechor. If he's coming to extract Pishnayim, Rabbi Osai, then what? Whose behalf is who? On whose behalf is he coming? On his father. To which the Gemara says, Umaykosha, Dilma Matzi Amar, Mikoach Avua de Abakasina, Ubimkom Av Kamina. So the Gemara says, no. He could still say, Chanoch could still say, I'm coming on behalf of my grandfather, but I'm coming on behalf of my grandfather representing my father's interests. So in other words, which we'll say is true, he's coming representing two sets of interests as the son, ultimately, again, of Reuven. But remember, because Reuven now is dead, so the grandson, his son, Reuven's son, stands in his stead as well. So I'm coming here to reclaim my grandfather's property, but I'm also coming representing my deceased father's Pishnayim interests as well. Eli Ikashi Akasha. Now, it says the Gemara, you're right. If you're going to have, if there's going to be a complication, here is the complication. Edos Bishtar. This is a very interesting case. So what happens? We'll call him Reuven. Reuven knew Edos for someone. Now, we'll say now, Reuven, not only did Reuven know Edos, but he served as an aid, as a witness on a transaction. And the transaction is recorded in a shtar. Take a look at the Rashbam. Hayulo yodealo be'edos. Reuven l'shimon. Let me read the rest of it first. So hayulo yodealo edos b'shtar. Ad shelo na'ase gazlon. V'na'ase gazlon. So we'll say, listen to this case. Reuven served as a witness on a transaction. And Reuven ultimately signed as a witness in a shtar on a transaction. Then what happens? Then Reuven resorted to a life of crime. Right? He becomes a thief. Right? So what happens? I'm sorry? He becomes a thief. I will say, what happens? And what happens? As well, I will say, once you're a thief, you're pasul eidos. Right? Once you're a thief, you can no longer serve as a witness. So the Shaila will say, but however, again, remember, his testimony in the shtar preceded his life of crime. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. So Hayyodeh le'edus, we'll say it's about 10 lines up from before the lines get wide. Hayyodeh le'edus, Reuven l'shimen, ad shlo na'ase Reuven gazlon, v'yashmo chasum b'shtar behalva also shal Shimon. So we'll say, so Reuven had signed a loan document on behalf of Shimon before Reuven became a thief. Now Reuven became a thief. And what happens? V'achar kach na'ase gazlon. Look at the Rashbam. We'll say, important Rashbam. V'nifsal le'edus. A thief is not permitted to serve as a witness. Kidchsiv lo sashes yadchem rasha dios eid chamos va'afa pishne eman adam lomar zek saviyadi kidisnam b'ksulus me'ata inomeid ak saviyado shari kol dvarav anu machzikin sheker mishenas se gazlon v'shema idach pasubos. Listen to this. Once you become a gazlon, we don't believe you. We don't even believe you to say what Rabosai, that's my signature. Once you are a thief, you have lost all credibility, even the simple credibility to identify that's my signature. So we'll say, so what do you do in this case? Watch this. So the Gemara says, this bishtach l'nasa gazlan, v'nasa gazlan, hu eino meid aksav yado, aval acheru me'idin. So we'll say, ultimately again, Reuven can testify and say, that's my signature. He can't uphold his signature, but someone else can go ahead and uphold his signature. In other words, we'll say, his eidos, as long as corroborated by someone other than him, will be a kasher eidos in the shtar. Why? Because it took place when? prior to his going to a life of crime. But he can't uphold his own signature because he has no ne'emanus. So the Gemara says, Hashta, Iyulo mehemen, acheni mehemen. So ultimately he says to the Gemara, does that make sense? A person is not going to be believed to say, this is my own signature. But yet someone else is believed to say it's his signature as well. Say it's just a strange dynamic. And this is something difficult to comprehend. Gemara says, I don't understand the microshio. What's the difficulty? Remember, we're talking about a case where his signature was already upheld in Bezin. Or as well, so we've learned about this before. If you look at the Rashbam, if you look in the wide lines, five lines in the wide lines, King Gonshuk, Behenpik Bebezdin, Beterem Hayoso Gazlon, Dahashta Leka Lamemar Hach. So also listen to this. Remember, there's something called the Henpik. A Henpik, I will say, was essentially a document in which Bezin would go ahead and certify a shtar or certify signatures. I don't know, there must be some modern day equivalent. Notary. Oh, I guess I can write. It was notarized. Meaning, it's at the end of the day, what's happening over here is his signature has already been authenticated. It's just that we need someone to produce the shtar that says it's been authenticated. So the Gemara says, "Ela ikasha hakasha." But just you should know, bless you, that case happens to be, you should know, halacha lemaisa, which I will say you should know, I think, not a topic for today, but there happens to be a lot of very deep hashkafa in this case as well. Because what is this an example of? This is an example of a person who at one point in time was a kasher and then becomes pasul. And you know, the fundamental shaila is when you see someone do something terrible and now they're relegated to a different status, how does that reflect on their previous work? You know, we'll say you see this sometimes in cases of leaders, right? Of leaders who do bad things. And then the shaila comes up is, okay, they did this bad thing. I know what their status is going forward. But what about the work of their past? How did, and these are unfortunately real situations that we contend with, but also just even on a personal hashkafic level. Like, let's say I have a failure. I suffer a real personal failure. So what does that mean about the good things that I've done until now? Does that mean they were meaningless? Because now I've fallen in this hole, I've fallen in this abyss. And I'll say, it's something we all contend with. I mean, we should all, if you're not contending with it, it's not because you didn't sin. Trust me, right? But it's because you're not thinking about it, right? But Lemaisa, again, at the end of the day, this is a fundamental stress. This is the Gemara's case. I was a kosher, I signed on the shtar, and I became a gazlan. So what about those past events? Are they good or are they not good? So there's good news. What's the good news? How do we paskin? We paskin that ultimately, again, your signature on the shtar before you became a gazlan is kosher. Because we'll say, what does it tell you? That even when you fail in life, even if I fail miserably, it doesn't negate the good that I've done. It doesn't. The good that I've done is there. It's mine. It's secure. It's my accomplishment. I have to figure out how to get out of this hole. I have to figure out how to rehabilitate myself. I have to figure out now how to get back up. But the good that I've done is still intact. An incredible yisob. Elo ikasha akasha. Brother says, the Gemara, here's the question. Ha yodelo edus b'shtar shlo tipo lo birusha. So also listen to this. I wrote down edus. I was an aid in a shtar. I was an aid in a transaction. Ad shlo tipo lo birusha. Who eino yachol akasha. So the Gemara says, what happened? Then it turned out that what? So we'll say, it turned out that I was made on property, that at the time that I was made on, the time that I gave the testimony, I had nothing to do with this property. Nothing to do with it. We'll say, then what happens? It turns out that as time went on, I'm actually going to inherit this property. For however, whatever the metzias is. We'll say, so now, I can't uphold my own signature in this document. Why? Why? Because I'm no geb eidus. I have a vested interest in this. So the Gemara says, "Who in the yochal l'kain ksav yado?" So I can't uphold my own testimony. Aval achirim yochol l'kain ksav yado. I will say others can uphold my testimony. So the Gemara says, "My kusha, what's difficult about this?" Dilma hachanam ki gon shoks like ksav yado based in. Maybe this is a case of, I'll say, where ultimately again my signature was upheld by a henpik and based in. So I don't need testimony. I just need someone to find the piece of paper that my signature was certified. El ikasha akasha. Rather says, "My right here's the." Kasha. Also, we're just trying to figure out, the Braisa advanced the fact that there was a case that came up in monetary law that was difficult to understand. We're just trying to understand, what's that case that was difficult to understand? So, listen to this case. I knew Eidos about someone before I became their son-in-law. right? In other words, I wrote down Avos for Reuven. Then it turns out that what? Over time, what happens, Rabosai? I marry Reuven's daughter. So again, obviously at the time that I signed on the shtar, meaning, you know, I didn't even get her resume yet, you know, let alone anything. So again, but now ultimately again, I'm the son-in-law to the person about who I was made. So I'll say, so what's the halacha? Who am I made aksav yado? So obviously I can't uphold my signature because I'm a nogea bedava, right? I have a vested interest in this edos. But ultimately, again, others are permitted to uphold my signature. So the Gemara says, "Hulo mehemen v'achreni mehemen." So we'll say there's always a strange dynamic where I'm not going to be believed about my signature, but others are believed about my signature. What a strange thing! Maybe you'll say over here that this is a case of again where my signature was upheld by a handpick in Beis Din. No, v'hamar Rav Yosef. This is talking about even in a case where what? Where my signature was not held up at Beis Din. So we'll say, this is mamish a case where what? Where people are coming to be made on my signature. So you're going to tell me there's a case over here where I can't testify about my own signature, but others will be believed to testify about my signature or my kosher. What's the kasha? Let's listen to this. So here's what's interesting. What's interesting is the following. See, we'll say, we assume that why am I not believed to go out and testify about my signature in a shtar that now involves my father-in-law? Why? Why am I not believed? From over there, and therefore what? The assumption is that what? I may lie. But I'll say, that's always the underlying issue over here. The underlying issue is that I'm a witness to a transaction that has an impact on someone who is close to me. And therefore the concern is, I may lie. So the Gemara says, it's interesting, if that's the case, that I may lie, so I don't understand. If that's the case, it's a strange dynamic that I can't uphold my own signature. In other words, I'm not even being made on the content. Rather, I'm just being made on the signature. So I don't understand why I can't. So Gemara says, well, maybe the issue over here is not about lying. Maybe the Gemara says, Dilma Gzeres Melechi. Maybe, again, it's just Gzeres Melech. It's just Gzeres HaKasa. The Ibn Shalom says, Di'iyu lo mehemen v'achreni mehemni. But the Ibn Shalom said, listen, here's the deal. You can't testify, someone else can testify, and it's not an issue of lying. We'll say why. Because if you don't say this, Moshe v'Aaron l'chosnam mishund lo mehemni. So we'll say, let's say again, the Gemara gives an exaggerated example. Let's say Moshe Rabbeinu signed an ashtar, right? And it was a loan document for a man named Yisrael. And then what happens? At the time of the collection of the debt, Moshe Rabbeinu is married to Tzipora, and therefore Yisrael is his father-in-law. We'll say, is Moshe Rabbeinu permitted to testify about his signature? And the answer is no. Is it because we're afraid that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to lie? Pashtos not. So the Gemara says, Ella mishum dlo mehemni, Moshe and Aaron. This halacha applies to Moshe and Aaron as well. And we're not really concerned if they're going to lie. Ella gzeres melech ushlo ya'idu lahem. Rather, I will say you have to say that it's gzeres melech. Gzeres melech means gzeres akasav. Hachinam. So we'll say it could very well be that this is not a din in Ne'amonos. It's just a Gzeres HaKasav in the realm of Eidos. Rather, says the Gemara, ultimately again, the complicated case is the case that we said initially, Rabosai, which is the case ultimately again of the son who went ahead and sold off his father's property while his father's alive. This was the case, Rabosai, of Reuven, who sold off Yaakov's property during his lifetime. Reuven dies, Yaakov dies, and then Chanoch, the son, wants to take it back from the purchasers. So the Gemara says, the kashilcha tacha savosecha yubanecha. We'll say, remember again, and the chidish then was the fact that what? That a grandson inherits a grandfather, and a grandson could essentially come and make the claim on behalf of the grandfather. And it was all based on that pasuk in Tehillim that said, Tachas avosecha yihiyu banecha. Underneath the fathers will be the sons, which you understood to be a reference ultimately again to grandchildren. Udikashilucha, so the Gemara says, Sahu bebracha ksiv. Well, maybe you'll say, that pasuk, Rabbi Osei, is not coming to teach you a halacha. Or is that pasuk is not coming to teach you that a grandson inherits the legal rights of the grandfather. Rather, I could just as easily say that what's the nature of that pasuk? Pasuk Rabosai, that's a bracha. Meaning, again, David HaMelech in Tehillim is writing about a blessing. He's saying, Tachas Avosecha Yu Banecha, that ultimately, again, you will be Zocha if you follow in the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The tzaddikim, ultimately, again, we'll see their sons, we'll see their grandsons, ultimately spread out throughout the land. Omi Matis Amis Bebracha Ksif. Says the Gemara, can you say that that pasuk is just talking about a bracha and not the halacha? On the base, avale inyan dina lo. But are you going to tell me that it doesn't apply legabi the halacha? So the Gemara says, va'atanya, we learned nafal habayis alav va'al aviv. The Gemara says nafal habayis alav va'al aviv. Alav va'al morisha. So we'll listen to this. Going back to Mishnayis, if the house falls on a man and on his father, or alav va'al morisha, or on him and someone else who would inherit him, or he would inherit, v'haisa alav ksuvas isho balchov. And I will say, ultimately, again, there is upon this individual, the son, right, the obligation for a ksuva, or the obligation that he has for other debts. What's the halacha? So the Gemara says, yarsha av omrim meis haben rishon v'achar kach meis hab. So the inheritors of the father say, the son died first, and then the father died. Ubalchov omer ha'av meis rishon v'achar kach meis haben. And it was, of course, the creditor says that what? That the father died first and then the son. Because the creditor, I will say, the creditor, whether it's the Balchov or the Ksuvas Isha, has an interest in what? The son ending off with the father's assets. And therefore, again, halacha l'maaseh, they claim that the father died first. V'achar kach meis haben, so the Gemara says, my love. So we'll say, who are these people? When we speak about Yorshe Ha'av and Morishav, my love Yorshe Ha'av b'ni. So we'll say, do we not mean that the Yorshe Ha'av, the inheritors of the father, we'll say, actually refer to the grandchildren? Because remember, again, this is a case of where the father and son, Yaakov and Reuven, were in the house together. The house collapsed and they both died. So we'll say, who are Yorshe Ha'av? Yorshe Ha'av perhaps are the grandchildren. Are the children ultimately, again, of Reuven, who are the grandchildren ultimately of Yaakov. Morishav, who are the Morishav? We'll say, Achi, they're the brothers. V'isakadaitcha, lo matzi armikach avuha, da'aba kasino, v'chi ksiv tachas avosach yubanecha v'bracha ksiv. So I'll say, if you want to say that grandchildren don't have a legal right to claim on behalf of their grandfather, because that pasuk in Tehillim of tachas avosach is not teaching you a halachic precedent, rather it's just giving a nice bracha to tzadikim. So the Gemara says, ki meis habein, v'achar kach meis ha'av, my havi. We'll say, if indeed the son died first, right? Reuven died first, and then Yaakov died. What rights would Reuven's children have? In other words, if you don't say that grandchildren inherit a grandfather, then the potential case of where Reuven, the son, dies before his father Yaakov, then I will say, what claim would Reuven's children have? So the Gemara says, Neimlu Balchov, so let the Balchov say to the grandchildren, the sons of Reuven, the grandchildren of Yaakov, Yerushas Avuan Kashakilna. Ultimately, again, we are taking the Yerusha ultimately of your father. So the Gemara says, lo, Yorshia. So we'll say, so the Gemara is pointing out over here, it has to be that Tachas Avosecha is not just a bracha, but rather what? Creates a halachic reality, namely that grandchildren have the ability to inherit their grandfather in the absence of the father. To which the Gemara says, lo, Yorshia Av Achiv. There could be that Yerusha'av, those who inherit the father, are the brothers. Morishav, Achi Davua. They could be ultimately, again, the brothers of the father. Okay, so the Gemara says you could interpret it differently as well. Bo Mine, well, says the Gemara now asks another kasha. Bo Mine, Merav Sheshas. Ben, Mahu Shiyara Shesima Bakar. So we'll say, just so you know, the way we paskin, halacha lemaisa, just closing out that sugya, is that a grandson does have the ability to inherit his grandfather. That ultimately, again, when the father dies, so, or I should say, in this case, where you have Yaakov, Reuven, Chanoch, three generations. So Chanoch, if Reuven dies, obviously in a regular situation where Yaakov dies, then Reuven inherits him, Reuven dies, then Chanoch inherits him. In a more complicated case, where let's say Reuven predeceases his father and leaves behind the father and the son, so ultimately, again, then when Yaakov, the grandfather, dies, so in that case, we'll say, so Chanoch, the grandson, will inherit his grandfather, because ultimately he stands in the place of his deceased father, Reuven. That is indeed halacha l'maisa. Next case, Baminer of Sheshas. Ben, Mao Shiyarshas Imo Bekever. They both say, so the asked father Shasha of Rav Sheshas, does a son have the ability to inherit his mother from the grave? What's the case over here? The case over here is where a mother, we will call her Rachel. Rachel has an only son. We'll call him Yosef. What happens? We'll say, so Yosef stands to inherit his mother. Then what happens? Yosef predeceases his mother. So we'll say the Shaila is, this is an interesting formulation. Does a son have the ability to inherit his mother from the grave? What that means, Rabbi says, is the following. So Yosef predeceases Rachel. When Rachel now dies, do we say that Yosef inherits his mother? Now Yosef's dead, but the inheritance goes through Yosef. Now remember, Yosef dies without children. So who would Yosef's inheritance go to, Rabbi says? Well, in this case, Yosef has paternal brothers. Because his father, Yaakov, right, also married another woman by the name of Leah. And he has paternal brothers from his father. So the Shaila is, when Rachel now dies, and Yosef has already passed away, do we say that the Yerusha nevertheless goes to Yosef? But because Yosef is dead, and he doesn't have children himself, he doesn't retain it. But what does he do? He funnels it to his paternal brothers. Or do we say that the Yerusha simply goes to Rachel's family? That's the fundamental Shaila. Amun Rashesha Stinisua. So Rashesha says, we learn this. Ha'av Shenishba. But say if a father was taken captive and died in captivity in some faraway land, and the son dies here in the city, or the son was taken captive and dies in captivity, and the father dies here. So both say the issue over here is both father and son have died. What's the complicating issue? The complicating issue is we do not know who died first. We don't know who died first. That's the issue. So the Gemara says, Yershia Avi Yershia. So the Gemara says, fine. Yershia Avi Yershia Ben Yachloku. So ultimately, again, the inheritors of the father, the inheritors of the son, have to go ahead and split the assets. So Heichi Dimar will say, what's the case? Ilei Makidiktani. If you want to say it's as stated, so Hei Ninhu Yershia Avi, Hei Ninhu Yershia Ben. So I'll say, who are the Yershia? Who are the Yershia Ben? Who, meaning, who are these people? And in other words, the Gemara says, not really who are these people, but aren't they the same people? Or aren't we talking about the same group of Yarshim? This is what it means to say. Av shenishba umes. So the Gemara says, Av shenishba umes ben bito b'medina. So we'll say, listen to this. Ultimately, you have a father who was taken captive and died in captivity. And also, I will say, ben bito. He has a son of his daughter who also died, I will say, in the Medina. Medina just means inhabitation. So the Gemara says, or uben bito shenishba. Right, umes aviv imba medina, v'lo yadinan e minayhu mes beresha. So we'll say, so in this case over here, you have the father, ultimately again, and a grandson. And both of them are dying, and both of them die. We don't know who died first. Yershe avi yershe ben yachloku. Ultimately again, the inheritors of the father and the inheritors of the son split the estate. Vim isa, nihinami de ben mes beresha. Liyar se la avua di ime bikivre, or liyar sina la achuha min avua. So we'll say, but nevertheless, if we say that a son inherits his mother from the kever, then what do we say? So go ahead, let him inherit first, and then go ahead and let him pass that inheritance on to his brothers, his paternal brothers. Elalav shmamina ein haben yoresh esimo bikever. Lahanche la'achim min av. We'll say, but rather, what do you see from this case? You see from this case that a son does not inherit his mother from the grave. In other words, we'll say, which is another way of saying that once someone dies, you are out of the inheritance running. So I'll say, you understand the Havamina was that perhaps a son inherits his mother even when he's already dead, even when he predeceases her. That way, when she dies, the inheritance goes to him. Obviously, he can't stay with him, but once it goes to him, it's then funneled to his paternal brothers. Kamash Malan, that once a person dies, they are out of the inheritance flow chart. They no longer inherit anything. So we also learned this. If the home fell on him and on his mother, everyone agrees that what? That the inheritors of the mother, the inheritors of the son, split the estate. If it was true that a son could inherit his mother from the grave, in other words, Rabbi said his son is dead, that even if he's dead, he can inherit his mother. Then Rabbi said, even if the son died first, let the son inherit the mother from the grave and pass that inheritance on to his paternal brothers. Elo, lav shmamina, Ein haben yorish esimo bekever lahanchel la'achem in ha'av shmamina. Rather, Rabbi will say, what do you see from here? You see from here that a son does not have the ability to inherit his mother from the grave. So we'll say, so aloch lamaisa, once the son dies, he is out of the inheritance, he is out of the inheritance running. Therefore, again, when the mother dies, if she dies without any children, then what? Who does the property go to? And again, obviously there's no husband, this husband also predeceased her. Lamaisa, again, the property will ultimately go to her mishpacha. V'taymamai. So the Gemara says, what is the reason for this? Amar Abaye, ne'emra siba beben, v'ne'emra siba bebal. So both say, the Torah in Yerusha uses the Lashon of Tziba, Tziba of Lotisov. In other words, Lashon of what's the right way to translate this? Moving, or right, movement. Transfer, thank you, transfer. It says Lashon of transfer to a son, and a Lashon of transfer by Yerusha to a husband. Masiba hamura babal in habal yorish ishto bekever. So it says, just like you use the Lashon of Siba of transfer property to a husband, and just like a husband can't inherit his wife from the grave. In other words, once a husband is dead, he can no longer inherit his wife. Af Siba hamura beben. So Rabbi say again, once a son is dead, he no longer has the ability to inherit his mother from the grave. So Rabbi say, the Gemara goes weiter. Hahu the Amar leLechavrei, Nichsei Dibar Sisin Mazbin Alacha. Well, so you know what? Actually, I'm gonna stop over here. I'm gonna stop over here for a time. I share with you a short idea on the parashah. It's a short daf. It's a short daf tomorrow. So we'll pick up Emir Hashem with this Nechasi Bar Sisin Emir Hashem tomorrow. And we'll finish the parak Emir Hashem tomorrow. But I'll share with you a short idea on the parashah.